Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, October 4th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry, with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button there at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable living. I would also like for you to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try ManaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try ManaPro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, the incubation specialists. Brinsea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supplies' Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Hope you all had a great weekend. It is a Monday morning. It's now time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Whisper. I know you had a busy Friday. My goodness, with the fair and all. How did all that work out? Because I know you were putting an awful lot of energy into it.
Everything went really well. Had a great Friday afternoon, and we headed up to Helen, Georgia, to visit my dad. Had a great relaxing weekend. Nothing was on the agenda. We just had great time visiting my father and hanging out up there. It was a beautiful weekend.
Oh, sweet.
Went out and Jen took a lot of pictures, just all over old barns and waterfalls and just all, you know, the mountain views and churches and things like that are just beautiful up there. And I had a beautiful fall weekend, so it was a really, really fun and relaxing weekend that we had. And got back last night, took care of a bunch of chores around the house, got ready for a really exciting week that we have this week. Really looking forward to it, both radio show and other things. But last night, we took the tractor for a spin around the neighborhood, Jen and I, and we came back by and my neighbor was outside.
You drove it around the street? Whisper, you drove it around the street? Is that what you mean by taking your tractor a spin?
We took it for a spin. Oh, every day I take it for a spin. I've got to. So, yep, right down.
Tractor. Yeah.
Yep, all through the neighborhood. It was so fun. And
did you give the kids a ride? When kids come to the farm here, they love riding on the tractor. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. So do you give them a little rider tractor rides around the park?
Not yet. I did give Jenna a little tractor ride. We saw some friends and whatnot, and they told them all about it and fun stuff. But, nope, not yet. I need to get one of those wagons, one of those hayride wagons, and put some bales of hay up there. That would be really fun to do Halloween weekend for all the kids. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we are definitely having had a good time. Came home and my neighbor was having a hard time getting her mower started. I assisted to no avail, so I said, "Well, there's a shop right up here on the corner. I guess we'll have to take it up there tomorrow." And she commented on our wonderful — this is our new neighbor. single mom, I think a four-year-old. And I couldn't, it was just a problem with the gas getting into the carburetor. I could prime it, and it would run for about 10 seconds, and then it would stall out. So it was just a gas delivery problem. And so she's taking it up to the shop and getting that taken care of. But she commented on how wonderful our eggs were. She was like, I just never really knew how much better fresh eggs would be. I fixed, I forget her daughter's name. I fixed, I can't remember her name. Anyways, I fixed Susie some, and I had to try some, and they were absolutely delicious. And Jen was like, oh, we'll bring you more. We've got plenty where that came from. And then she said, I was telling my mom, I think they're from Alabama. And her mom was like, oh, yeah, definitely a big difference between farm eggs and store-bought eggs. And you ought to try fresh butter. And so she, my neighbor was telling me all about this. And so last night I had to whip up a little bit of butter. So I made some butter last night. And me and Jen have a little tub of it. And I'm going to take her a tub of fresh butter for this afternoon when she gets home from work. So say, here you go. Your mom was talking about fresh butter. Here you go. Try it. Let me know what you think. So I made a little butter last night. Had some fun with that. But
Did you hand churn it? You have a little hand churn butter maker, or did you put it in the blender?
No, I make it the old-fashioned way, and I do that. You know that old song, shake, 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 shake your
shake
booty.
Your butter,
shake your butter. That's exactly right. So I think it's about a quart-sized mason jar, and I just put the heavy cream in there and just shake, 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 and it doesn't take long at all. And sure enough, here comes this beautiful, tasty, fresh butter. People were asking me online, is that goat's butter from your goats? I'm like, no. We haven't gotten pregnant yet to start producing milk, and I don't even think with our time schedule right now we're going to do that right this second as planned. We may wait until next year when we have maybe a little bit more time and whatnot. But so yeah, it's just good old fashioned heavy cream into butter, and it was it was tasty. It was very tasty.
It
so
is.
I'm going to introduce my neighbor to some fresh butter for this evening. So maybe she'll enjoy that. What did you do this weekend,
Wonderful.
Pat?
Well, I got to say, I am lucky enough. Within about a half a mile from where I live is a dairy, and so I can get fresh from the cow, pretty much milk, and then make butter. Or they're doing cheeses. They're getting very good at doing different kind of cheeses. But before we move on to my weekend, I had an amazing weekend. I learned a lot. But let me tell you now: are you letting Jen drive the tractor?
I offered. And she's just not quite ready yet. And I'm sure she will. That's
okay.
Not a problem. That's
kind
of like
the guys always don't have to drive tractors. Once she gets used to it, I was the same way. And once I got used to it, it was just such a thrill because it's I don't know, you can do so much with it, and it is a treat. So don't encourage her to keep driving that tractor. It's very important.
Absolutely.
In fact, I might give her a call and just to say, this is really a powerful thing that you can learn is getting on that tractor. Every woman should know how to drive a tractor and use a front end loader, I think. And then you had the backhoe, and you really can impress the guys. Anyway, that's the. Oh dear! It sort of comes with the country or sort of semi-urban living in a way, is the equipment thing. Yeah,
I agree. It was funny yesterday on my way out to the front of the subdivision. It was just very ironic. I was going by one of the side streets, and there looked to be a father sitting on the curb, and his daughter and son. His son looked like to be about four, and he was on a pedal car of a John Deere tractor. Going up and down the street on his little tractor. So it was very funny. And then here comes this big Ford tractor riding down the road. Riding down the road. So,
did you do any
wheelies? Yeah, No wheelies. So here's this little kid on his little pedal cart John Deere tractor. And here comes Andy and his big Ford tractor riding down the subdivision main street. So, yeah, it was that was quite funny. Just sitting there waving. Yeah, it was quite entertaining.
That's great. Did you have your bibs on?
Of course, it's after October 1st, and the Chicken Whisperer has two wardrobes, hot and cold, and basically between October 1st and probably around April 1st, maybe May 1st, somewhere in that area, it's basically bibs, overalls, absolutely, overalls, gotta love those, and then basically once it warms up, let's just say between May 1st and October 1st, it's casual attire. It's the Docker style shorts and a nice cool casual shirt. And so my wardrobe has two seasons, hot and cold. And since now it is October 1st, it is now. In fact, I put on my Facebook page, I said, you know, it's officially October 1st, which means all seven pair of bib overalls are in the washing machine right now. And, yep, all seven pair.
Don't wash the black formal ones now with the regular bibs. You know, you got to keep that separate.
Oh, so, yeah, we had so, yep, it is bib season. That is for sure. So, without a doubt, it is bib season. So, today's Monday. And today's Monday. So what did you do over the weekend, Pat?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. Well, I yet again I helped some friends process their flock. They called and it came up with the poultry club, and they got a straight run of Americanas, and they said they're all crowing. They're all crowing, so they just wanted to start over and put these down. So they wanted to do just a little backyard processing. So I went over just to help out. Plus, I had a couple roosters that also in my group started crowing. Well, what was so interesting, Whisper, is there's a lot of it's such a relatively easy process, but they had like Rambo knives to do the jugular vein cut. And their knives were so dull, and they had killing cones. I mean, they did so many things right, but there were so many little things that are just so easy to do, like using pruning shears to lop the neck off, or using the legs off, I mean, and loppers to do the neck, so you don't dull your regular knives. So anyway, it came to me that and they did a great job. They had the scalder there. It was a turkey oil. What do you call it when you fry turkeys? It was one of those big tubs with a propane scalder. So anyway, what was interesting, two things came out really, really clear. One is that these Americana male roosters, they're probably about 3-4 months old, you know, when they start crowing. They dressed out to about 2 pounds each. I mean, that's just really small. Compared to a Cornish cross that dresses out to about 4.25 pounds at 5 to 6 weeks old. So one of the things that really reminded me yet again is that if you're going to do birds for meat, you really go with the meat birds. It's like the layers are great at laying, and the meat birds are great at putting on weight, and you start getting with the dual purpose, and they're just so-so at both. In a way, but it was almost not worth dressing them out for that little bit. But the other thing is that just to make the kind of knives available so that it goes so much easier. And I spent a lot of time kind of pondering this weekend. I know I'm weird, and you know, I don't enjoy processing. I got to tell you, it's not something I look forward to. But for the sake of the birds, the more efficiently it's done, the more humanely it's done. And, of course, all these birds had wonderful lives. So I even had a meeting with my mastermind group, and we've decided that we need to get a cultural skills, processing skill sets, little micro backyard processing skill sets, up fast. So what we've got is I've got a slideshow presentation, and, you know, just how we use Skype to come on down at your group or there's a group out in Seattle I'm going to go on and do some Skype workshop with. What we could do is just to kind of get them going is go through some of the basics before people do their processing, or just to get them so that they realize it's not such a horrible thing, which it's not. I mean, the roosters they faint away, and there was very little drama or anything with it. And the other thing is, of course, we've got a hands-on processing clinic. This is the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club, but we're making it open to the public. It's October 17th. It starts at 4 p.m. here in Lexington, Virginia. Well, you'll have to call for directions. But we like to get these going pretty much with any poultry club that wants to do it. And I think with the technology that we've got now, that it's very possible either to do a Skype thing again, or if someone there hands-on doesn't know how to do it, or just at least do a primer. Because if we're really going to get backyard chickens Whisper, we've talked about this time and time again. We've got to have a place to do the roosters. Even if people don't necessarily want to do meat birds, there has to be a way to take care of all these urban roosters. So that's kind of been my weekend, is thinking about putting this slideshow together. I've got it pretty well mapped out and talking with my mastermind group. And Gossamer Foundation, God bless them, is willing to sponsor this. So that's how I spent my weekend. I was just thinking about if I were a chicken, I would really want to know the people that are going to process me, that they know mm-hmm. what they're doing. Because, they had this Rambo knife to make that little cut, and that just isn't how – poor chickens, that's just not quite how it's made. But they did so many other things right. So anyway, that's what I did this weekend pretty much. I mean, there was a lot of other things in between. I did a yoga class and went to a party and had a really fine couple of microbrews with a friend. I love the local beers. I have about one a month, I think it is these days. But anyway, that's what I did this weekend. So maybe you and I can collaborate on this somehow or another or whatever. But I think the processing has got to come to the forefront so people really know where their food comes from. And also the truth about, you know, when you process roosters, it's almost, at least at this age, it's almost just not worth it. The two I took were quite fine birds, just heritage hybrids, but I'll probably end up doing them as stew or giving them to the dogs to chew on. So there you have it. And they, by the way, dogs do love chicken feet. So I took a couple to bring to my dogs, and they snarf them right down. So that's a little gory way to start the weekend, but it's the week. But it's just kind of what I did this weekend. So there you have it. So.
Very good. You heard it. That's what Pat does on her weekends.
Yeah, I'm just such a party girl. You know, I just really break out and go. No, but it was so instructive when you think about the whole scheme of our culture and what kind of social, in a way, social skills, literally, but you know, life skills that we have forgotten. A lot of it is in our food production and local food production. That's partly what's I think, bothering our children with the ADHD and all the extreme obesity. I mean, here in Rockbridge County, we have a director of obesity in the schools because so many kids are just so fat. And it's not their fault. It's not necessarily. It's so much of the processed food diets that just stimulate the parts of the brain to eat more and eat more and feel lousy so you don't even get up off the couch. So for me,
It's not their fault. They're not walking to the grocery store and filling up the cart with that stuff. It's mom and dad's fault. Last time I checked, the 8-year-old's not buying groceries every week. It's the mom and dad that are buying groceries every week. It's kind of like the way some of the young girls are dressing now, and you know you'll even hear parents say, yeah, she's just dressing beyond her age, and you just want to say, you want to grab them by the collar and say, oh yeah, who bought her that? Who bought her those clothes? So yeah, it's not necessarily the kid's fault. It's the mom and dad for stopping at Burger King. You know, kids today have a personal relationship with Wendy, Ronald, and the King. It's because of, I think, a lot of times laziness. Drive through the drive-thru on the way home from school, get some nuggets and fries, and then go home. So I can't totally blame the children either. It's who's buying the groceries, who's buying the mac. We live in a mac and cheese and chicken nugget world. I put that on my Facebook page this weekend when I was I had a chickens in the news that we're going to do real quick and then get into today's programming. But yeah, I mean, Jamie, Jamie, the Food Nation with, and I can't remember his last name, Jamie Oliver, Food Nation, I think it was, that came on TV, had about 6 or 7 episodes, and he went into a school system and saw exactly what they were having, you know, mac and cheese and then the chicken nuggets and the chocolate-flavored milk, strawberry-flavored milk and whatnot. And then he was asking them, so what did you have for dinner last night? Chicken nuggets. What part of the chicken does that come from? So yeah, it was very, very interesting how, you know, nope, I don't think we can blame really the kids at all because they're not buying this food. It's the parents that are buying the food, and it's the parents that are buying these trashy clothes that the girls are wearing. So, but anyway, that's my 2 cents for today. Let me get over to chickens in the news. Based on that little rant, let me cover this because I want to go over to my Facebook page because It was it's 100% related, and it really was a really good story. So let me scroll down here and try to find it. Here it is, Harvest Fest. And more towns, I think, across America needs to have a Harvest Fest. Harvest Fest welcomes guests and celebration of agriculture. Of course, Chickens in the News is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio. Visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. We will be broadcasting live from Meyer Hatchery on Friday, November the 12th, and then we'll be broadcasting live at the Ohio National on Saturday, November 13th. You can learn all about the largest poultry show in the country, the Ohio National Poultry Show, at ohionational.org, and you can visit Meyer Hatchery at meyerhatchery.com. So Harvest Fest welcomes guests in celebration of agriculture. Charlotte Palmberg thought this might be a great way to celebrate her grandson's 14th birthday. Visit a farm, see some animals, see where food actually comes from. Saturday worked well for Palmberg as the Washington State University Extension Service and a handful of other sponsors hosted the 12th annual Pierce County Harvest Fest. This comes to us from C.R. Roberts, a staff writer with the News Tribune. Charlotte, let's see, 34 farms from the Key Peninsula to the Pilot Valley and beyond welcomed guests to what was billed as a celebration of agriculture. They were hay rides on Gentle Giant Meadows Ranch in Vaughan, and there was a pumpkin patch at Spooner Farms, and there was a lavender fudge at Stringland Farms in Eatonton, and jam at the Moon Farm in Pelop. It says, this is our fourth farm, said his grandmother, watching over two young granddaughters as they fed grass to a sheep. I think that knowing what goes on in your community is important, she said. People need to know where their food comes from. Children need to know that vegetables come from the ground, that chickens lay eggs, and that milk comes from cows. A sheep gives us wool, announced Meredith, 9 years old. She looked across the fence. I've only seen alpacas two times in my life, she said. I think it's really interesting to look at the animals, said Derek, just turning 14. Not only do llamas protect sheep, but the alpacas also protect the sheep. They can sit by a television any old time, said Palmberg. Ken and Carrie Little brought Little Earth Farm, bought Little Earth Farm a year ago, September. Their 35 acres make up about one-third of the former Ford Farm, a dairy operation sold to three families in a transition that will preserve the land for agriculture purposes. Ken Little said he expected more than 100 people to visit his farm on Saturday. There were eggs laid by chickens that pecked nearby, and there were strawberries still turning ripe in the field. And so I thought this was a really, really good story. You can see this on our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/ the Chicken Whisper Harvest Fest welcomes guests in celebration of agriculture. And then, of course, lots and lots of comments that this got. Jennifer commented, my kids call pullets little nuggets. Ruth said that she feasted on greens from her backyard this morning. Two eggs were still warm. Food doesn't get any better or fresher than that. Kathleen on our Facebook page, we are so open to someone coming to see our operation. They can still see part of the garden with tomatoes growing and the fruit trees and all of our birds. It's so cool. Jennifer puts, we expose our grandchildren to the source of food all the time. But she has a question. At what age is a child ready to see a chicken butchered and dressed and then served on a plate? I don't want to scar them for life. Aaron says, Jennifer, we have a 3 and almost 5-year-old. We include them in watching the whole process. They respect the source of food even more. And then Jennifer says, thanks. I'll see if my 3-year-old granddaughter is ready for the idea. And so, you know, I don't have an answer for that. You know your children. You know the maturity level of your children at 3 and 5 and 6 and 8 and 10. But think about years past. I mean, I know we're a different society today, but think about back in the Civil War days and even before then, just maybe 100 years ago even, when folks were doing this, and it was maybe a part of their children's chores and responsibility to go out and pick their dinner for tonight and go out and catch that chicken that that then they would have to process. So it's just a matter of something new, not necessarily something bad or something wrong. And if you think about how many 7-, 8-, 9-year-olds are actually sitting in front of a TV playing war games and shooting, you know, thousands of TV video game people every day, and as graphic as those video games are, okay, let's see. We can teach them to harvest a chicken and vegetables, and we can teach them to process the chicken and do that. Or they can sit in front of the TV and play war games all day and kill thousands of people in a matter of an hour playing this video game that, guess what, the parents bought them. So, it's you know, I don't have an answer for that because you know your children better than I do, but looks like she's going to go for it and see how they – see how they can handle it. So that's my chickens in the news today. I wanted to share with everybody. I know that in Springfield they're going to be voting tonight based on backyard poultry. You can see that news also on our Facebook page and some other things. But I definitely, Pat, if you have news, I'm going to let you share that. But we definitely want to get in onto today's show. I want to make sure we have a good hour to discuss this. It's nuclear preparedness for the average homeowner. Nuclear preparedness for the average homeowner. Now that I have your attention, this will be the topic for today's radio show. The Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley is on the first and third Monday of every month, and so we're glad you tuned in to us today. There were lots of comments when I posted this yesterday about today's show. Tracy put, I just love apocalyptic thinking. My husband worries about me. Roger said, I have the same picture, because I put a picture of a big mushroom cloud. I have Roger on our Facebook page says, I have the same picture, but it says, welcome to Arkansas. Please don't store your moonshine next to the heat source.
That's good.
I love that.
Excuse
one.
I couldn't hold that laugh back.
welcome to Arkansas. Please don't store your moonshine next to your heat source. And then we've got Lori said, I love the idea of being prepared for anything. It doesn't matter if nothing happens. It's nice to know that I have bags of flour, rice, and beans ready should we be without power for a week or more. It doesn't hurt to be prepared, but it could hurt if you're not. And then Roger also, he's the one who put about the moonshine. Roger, he's a comedian here. He put, it's really hard to get chickens to put sunblock on. And then let's see what else we got here. Here's my comment, and I think it's very valid. I put, and I've said this a lot when we talk to people about being prepared about anything, I put, do you expect to crash your car tomorrow? Of course not, but you have insurance, don't you? Do you expect your house to burn down tomorrow? Of course not, but you have insurance, don't you? Being prepared is just another type of insurance in case something happens. It's not fear-mongering. It's not crazy. Just ask the people in New Orleans or any other place that has been hit hard by a disaster, whether man-made or not. Being prepared for a number of different what-ifs is very important. And that's the way I look at it when you have to go out and purchase something, whether it be a five-gallon bucket of potato flakes or a water purifier or water barrels or a lantern or propane or whatever the case may be. And you're like, I've got to spend this money and nothing may ever happen. Yeah, well, write that insurance check every month for your car insurance and say the same thing. Write your homeowner's insurance check every year and say the same thing. Write that health insurance check every month and say the same thing. You hope and don't expect to have a heart attack next month, but you have health insurance to just in case something may happen. So again, being prepared is maybe just another type of insurance because we don't know, whether it be a tornado or a flood or who knows what. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that today. We've got lots of very interesting comments on our Facebook page when we posted today's topic. Real quick, do you have any news, Pat? If not, we'll take a commercial break, and we'll bring Aaron Mackley on to talk about nuclear preparedness for the average homeowner.
Yeah, well, I have somebody who can wait. Let's move on to emergency preparedness. So charge ahead.
All righty, sounds great. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and we come back because it's the first Monday of October. It's the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley, and today, nuclear preparedness for the average homeowner. Stay with us. Hey, by the way, when we're at break, get that pen and paper. You may want to take some notes.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer.
here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today, first Monday of the month, which means it's the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. It also means that Mondays, as you know, we're sponsored by Crazy K Farm and the Hen Saver Hen Apron. In fact, at the end of today's radio show, we're going to have chicken trivia. We have a great question for you, and one lucky listener, if they're the right caller and have the right answer to the question, is going to win a Hen Saver Hen Apron from Crazy K Farm. Visit them online at hensaver.com. All righty, it's now time to start our preparedness show with Aaron Mackley. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. And, yes, this topic is a little bit different, I suppose, than some of our other topics, and probably not a topic that any of us expect any immediate or short-term potentiality. But the reason I wanted to talk about this particular topic is not because I think it's necessarily going to be a concern immediately or any time in the near future, but that it's something a lot of people don't even want to think about. And it's something that if you put a little bit of thought into it and kind of look at your own situation, you can say, you know what, this isn't that scary. I just need to make a few precautions, take some steps so I know what to do. Because typically, any time, I don't know if we can say historically any time, because we've only had a two or three situations in history when a nuclear type of thing was even a concern. But in those times, these things, typically it's not going to say, oh, today we don't have any concern and tomorrow it's here. Generally, you're going to see the political environment kind of heating up and getting more and more serious. The only thing that changes that picture is potential of because of terrorist type of thing. But the thing is, with a nuclear type of a situation, it takes extreme amount of coordination for any organization to try to pull something off like that. And if it were on a national level, it would be you would definitely see the rumblings and the things happening that, you know, things are leading up. On the other hand, you know, we look at sometimes in the situation with the situation in Iraq with the nuclear plants over there that they say are for power generating, and yet it's pretty obvious to everyone that they're trying to prepare to be able to have nuclear weapons. And if that were the case, and then if Israel, you know, if they were going to attack Israel, and if Israel got, you know, what would happen with Russia versus what would happen with the U.S. and China, and so these things kind of escalate. But it's not likely that these things, a nuclear type of situation, would occur overnight. It's just not that likely. And so it gives you a little bit of time to start preparing, particularly as it got more and more escalated. Thinking back to maybe like the situation with the island Cuba off the coast, you know, as with Kennedy administration and things like that, these things started building up, and you could see that tension building, and that's more likely to be the type of situation. But what I wanted to talk about on here is that a lot of people, there's just a misunderstanding, just simply an ignorance of many of the ways that nuclear energy works and how it would affect us. And a lot of people say, oh, well, if we're going to have a nuclear bomb, you know, I want to be right there and just get blasted away and I won't have to worry about it. But really then, you know, that's kind of a selfish way to look at it, because there's lots of other people, including families, that we need to try to coordinate with. And so it's just not, you know, putting our heads in the sand is just not a good way. Now, interestingly enough, almost every other industrialized country in the world, particularly in Europe and in the European area, they plan for these things. As a matter of fact, their government expenditures, for example, in Switzerland, it's national law that they have to have bomb and, which includes nuclear protection, shelters. They have to show that they have access to either through a community one, and that they have enough people for it, or that they have to have their own, and they have to show that. And in much of Europe, they spend a lot of money to do that. In Russia, as a matter of fact, they're part of their national. It has in the past. I'm not sure exactly right now, but I know up to only about 5 years ago that the Russia, they were not as concerned about a nuclear war, because they'd say, well, we know where our people are going to be. They know how to take care of themselves. But the United States has taken a different approach to this. It's kind of like, you know, because it's such a big issue, and it'd be so hard for us to try to take that kind of protection for everyone, we're just going to downplay it. We're not going to emphasize it that much. And so the actual expenditure per person, the per capita, is like one-tenth of what a lot of the other industrial countries actually spend to try to help people protect against disaster, major disaster, including bombs and things that would take protection. So that's just kind of an introduction to the topic. And so what I wanted to do is kind of give a little bit of introduction about how to protect oneself against nuclear. And the interesting thing is most people in a home, it, with a little bit of warning, could take care of themselves fairly easily. People that are in the cities, and unfortunately that's, in this regard, unfortunately it's a much larger percentage, but there's still things that they can do. But to understand, first of all, you have to understand the concept of what radiation is and how it works and how to protect yourself against it. So to kind of help us understand that, first of all, let's think about a microwave oven. A microwave oven uses, it's a little bit different type of radiation, but the principle still is the same. That think of a one little, I'll call it a piece or a little radioactive element. And each, a radioactive element is going to send out rays, if you will, of radiation, but it's not like the sun necessarily. There's different types of radiation. The sunlight that we feel is a little bit different than some of the radiation that we would get, alpha, beta, different types of particles. And what happens is, let's say we have a chunk of radiation, maybe a little tiny chunk, but we'll just think of your fist as a piece of radiation, not a piece of radiation, but a piece of material that is radiating energy. And what it's doing is it's sending out little bullets of radiation. But just like a bullet, think of maybe like a 22 bullet. Most people are familiar with a small bullet. If I shot that bullet out of my gun at a target that is a piece of paper, the bullet's going to go right through that piece of paper. You add another piece of paper, and it still goes through. You add 20 pieces of paper, and it's going to slow it down a little bit. You add, you know, an inch or two of paper, and that 22 bullet will probably not penetrate the entire paper, that stack of paper. Well, it's a similar thing with radiation. Once the bullet stops moving, it stops causing damage, period. It's end. It's gone. It's the end of life, okay? And so and over time, this particle, let's say the 22 gun, this particle that's emitting the radiation, the gun becomes less powerful. So instead of shooting a 22 long cartridge, you're now shooting a 22 short cartridge with less gunpowder behind it, and then later on you're shooting smaller until that bullet eventually drops off the end of the barrel and just, you know, it doesn't have any more energy. Or rather, think of it in terms of destructive power. Okay, so when this energy is traveling through something, it is potentially hitting something else and causing damage. But when that bullet stops, there's no more damage. Or when the gun that has no more gunpowder behind that bullet, and we'll consider the gunpowder the amount of energy that's in that bullet. When it has no more gunpowder behind the bullet to shoot it, it is no more the particle is no more dangerous than a piece of steel. And so you think of that in terms of how nuclear energy works. And so that's why you start thinking about the 2 inches of paper that a 22 bullet eventually, you know, let's say at 50 yards, I don't think a 22 bullet is going to go through the entire 2 inches of paper. Okay? It's going to get stuck maybe a third or halfway through it. Well, the same thing holds true with radiation. So now we take this particle, we'll consider it the 22 rifle, okay? This particle of energy, or the particle that is emitting the radiation in all different directions, of course, it's not just a single direction. But this particle now, remember, it's the danger of that particle or the things that it's emitting, the bullets that are coming out, is completely dependent upon the amount of energy behind it. And that amount of energy is what we call, it has what they call a half-life, okay? Every certain amount of time, it will reduce half of its gunpowder or half of its energy. And that half time is in the energy that we would most likely experience and the most damaging energy that we would experience in a nuclear fallout. It has a half-life of what we call a 7-10 rule. So in other words, after every 7 hours, it's a 1/10 of the amount of The half-life is such that every 7 hours, about one-tenth of the energy or the gunpowder is still in that bullet. Okay? So if we have a 22 long cartridge, after 7 hours, it only has a little bit of energy, and it goes down and down and down. Now, obviously, radiation is much more powerful than a 22 bullet, so it takes a little while for that radiation to go down. But if you think about that, in 7 hours, it's one-tenth of the power that it had before. 7 more hours, it's one-tenth of that amount. 7 more hours, it's one-tenth that amount, until at about, let's say we had a nuclear blast and we're getting maybe 1,000 Rankines per hour of energy. We'll talk about how much Rankines per hour that means. That's killer, okay? That amount is lethal, okay? But after 48 hours, that's 2 days, you're only getting about 10 Rankines per hour. Now, what does that mean? Let's say that there is going to be a nuclear blast. Now, there's two parts to a nuclear situation. Number one is the blast itself. If you're in the blast area, then you have to be in a type of shelter that can withstand that kind of blast, generally underground, outside of the shaking air. You know, there's a part that's actually you're going to get the rattle and the shake, and then there's the actual blast that's going to transmit through the air or through the surface or through the ground, okay? But let's assume that your protection, your where you are, can withstand that blast, or you're outside of that maybe 15 or 30-mile range, or depending on the size of the blast itself. Or if it's a dirty bomb, there's very little blast. It's just all radiation that just kind of gets scattered, okay? So it's kind of a different situation. But now if you're outside of the blast area or in a shelter that's that can maintain or protect you against the blast area, now you only have to deal with the fallout and the radiation. And what happens is in the blast, it sends out all sorts of particles. Remember these little 22 or the 22 rifles. They're sending 22 rifles out everywhere that are shooting in all different directions, okay? After the 7 hours, the 14, the 48, you know, after 2 days, that amount of Rankines per hour is down to 10. Now, that's enough that I could actually go out for short periods of time, do what needs to be done outside, and then get back in. And they say that if you can stay sheltered for 2 weeks, you know, I've talked about 2 days, 48 hours, 2 weeks, the radiation is enough, it's lowered enough that we can pretty much be out most of the time. It's not like you want to be out in the middle of all this dust, but it's now at a point where you can actually clean up, particularly if you have suits or things like that. But the point is you can easily get into an environment it's at a point where you can actually be outside and start solving problems. But after the 2 days, you can go out to short amount of time to resolve problems. Let's say go get more water, figure out how to get water. And, of course, you know, we talked about water one other time. Maybe we can talk about it again, about taking care of water in a nuclear type of environment, okay? Because remember, what the particle does, let's say we can actually use food as a barrier. Let's assume that we're not talking about the blast environment. We're now talking about radiation, okay? The fallout that goes for miles and miles and miles, okay? And we're now taking care of the fallout and the radiation particles, okay? So this fallout is coming, and it's landing on the ground, and it's making this powder, and all this powder, this radiation powder that's on the ground, is full of 22 rifles that are shooting these radioactive bullets out, okay? After 48 hours, they're not shooting as hard. After where you can actually get out and you'd feel the bullet hit you on the skin, but it's not going to hurt you very much. You know, this is kind of a hypothetical, kind of to understand it. But that's what's happening with radiation. But think about food. Notice when you put food inside of a microwave oven, you're shooting these blasts of radiation into your food, and it's heating up the food. It's causing damage. That's a completely different topic, as a matter of fact. But it's causing damage, which is and it's exciting the molecules and making them get hot. That's how radiation works. Okay, and as it's heating the food, this energy is penetrating the food, but it only goes partially through it. Excuse me, partially through that food. But as it's going through, it's heating it up. It's causing the friction and heat as it goes through this, and that's what heats up. It gets your molecules spinning faster, bumping against each other, and that's what's heating up your food. So, but once that bullet stops, it's no longer essentially there. It's the energy it's gone, and now that food just has the temperature from the molecules spinning. And then as molecules slow down, it gets cooler again. And that's what we see, our food heat up and cool off. So now let's say we're in some type of a shelter that we can create, and we're going to talk briefly about that. We're inside of a shelter. We can cut essentially density of material. Remember the 2 inches of paper that we're shooting through, a ream of paper? Well, what you need to do is create a ream of paper around you. Well, we can do that with earth, with concrete, with steel, with water, anything that has density. And so food, if you're storing bags of food and you build your downstairs shelter, or maybe you have a basement and you build this little kind of a wooden block downstairs and you just stack your food around that, well, now you have density around there that it's, remember, the bullet's going to go halfway through and it's going to stop and it's gone. The energy is gone. So it doesn't hurt the food. It doesn't hurt the water. It's not like, oh, now my food is radioactive and I can't eat it. That's not quite true. Okay? So the concept is how much shelter, how much density do you need? And I've seen one, is a basement enough shelter? No, not, well, it depends on where you are and how far away you are. Okay? First of all, before I go any further, so I don't forget to do this, the information, all of the information I'm talking about comes from a very, very well-written, it is the source of tested information on nuclear preparedness. It's called Nuclear War Survival Skills. It is a book that was written by Cresson, C-R-E-S-S-O-N, Cresson H. Kearney, K-E-A-R-N-E-Y. I'm just going to type that in real quick here. Nuclear war.
Got a
survival.
Quick question for you.
Okay.
Quick question for you, Aaron. And I just popped into my mind, and probably several other of our many listeners and people in the chat room, is what? Because people think, you know, they think back to the television shows and the big mushroom cloud, and they think about Hiroshima and becoming a shadow on the sidewalk. And what, you know, if you're so close to ground zero, it's not going to matter what you do. You're going to be dust yourself. But what, first, your understanding of how far away from ground zero of this blast are we even looking at people surviving? Is it 10 miles, 12 miles, 22 miles? I've got a CD that kind of, I didn't bring it up, but it has I'll pull it up on my computer, but it kind of shows that based on scientific research. But I was wondering if you had that information based on, because people thinking, well, I'm not even going to be around to worry about this if this should happen. But, you know, based on how close you are to ground zero, how many miles out from ground zero, do you have that information?
Well, you know, it's a hard question to answer because what if it's someone that's like a terrorist that can bring in a small bomb that they can put in the back of a car or something like that? We're looking like, I mean, not even a kiloton bomb. You're going to talk about maybe half a mile, okay? But if you're talking about something that gets through and it's weapon that's been shot clear across, you know, through rockets from Russia, and we're talking about a several megaton bomb, then you're talking about a completely different picture. So really what you have to do is understand, where are my shelters? Where, what, just take the time to just do a little bit of research and find what shelters are around here. If a bomb lands on top of you, you're out of luck, more than likely. But a small bomb 5 miles away, you're going to be just fine. If you're right down in the heart of a place where it's going to take place, you know, it just depends on those kind of things. Now, there's a couple questions about dirty bombs. A dirty bomb is a bomb that has not had the nuclear explosion. What's had is it is a bomb that spreads a bunch of nuclear material that has nuclear energy in it, okay? But it didn't have a nuclear explosion. The nuclear explosion is much, much, much greater. So a dirty bomb is a bomb simply that has fissionable material fissionable material that is blasted out. Now you got the material everywhere that's sending out the little bullets. But it didn't cause the blast that was the size of it. And so they're very different things, okay? They still send out nuclear energy, but they don't send it they don't blast. And see, what a nuclear bomb will do is the bomb itself causes the explosion and then puts nuclear and it energizes the particles of soil that it's putting up everywhere in the air. And so now you've got this soil and this dust that's coming down that's been radiated. And that has this, it now has radiation that's sending out the radiation pulse. So that's the difference between where a dirty bomb is just nuclear stuff that's been blasted around. A nuclear bomb is one that actually radiates the surrounding, throws it up in the dust, and that's the dust that comes down and settle. So that's the difference between the two. So
okay, and let's talk. I was going to say, I interrupted you there regarding that question, but I want to stay, I guess, back on your topic of telling us what do we need to surround ourselves with, that 2-inch paper. You talked about water. You talked about concrete and steel and whatnot, and you're going to continue on with that.
Right. Now, let me give you a couple, two or three numbers, okay?
Okay.
It's what we call a half protector, okay? And they call it a PF or a protection factor. A protection factor of 2 means it, and this is multiplicative, which means that if I have a protection factor, the density for a protection factor of 2, and I put twice that amount, let's say the protection factor, I need 3 inches of some material to give me a protection factor of 2. And then I double that to 4, so I now have 6 inches of material. That gives me a protection factor of 4. If I put 3 more, it gives me a protection factor of 8. Okay? So it's multiplicative. It's not just additive, which means if I don't – so what that means is if for steel I need 1 inch to give me that protection factor of 2, I need – and you can probably write these down or maybe someone can jot these in the chat room. And for concrete, I need 3.5 or 3.3 inches of concrete for a protection factor of 2, okay? Now, a concrete wall typically is going to be 6, like a basement, is going to be roughly 6 inches. And nowadays, I think there might even be 8 inches. Okay, so let's say it's a 6 inches. We have almost a protection factor of 2 protection factors, which means that would be a protection factor of 4. Okay? Now, let's take earth, which is 4 to 4.8 inches, depending on the density of your earth. If it's a very... The heavier clay soils will be 4 inches, would provide the same thing as a lighter sandy soil of 4.8. See, sandy soil has a lot of air between it. As water, it also has a dense protection factor. 7 inches of water will give you a protection factor of 2. So now as you add these up, what that means is if I put a barrier of soil around me, 3.5 inches would give me a protection factor of a little over 500, okay, 512, okay? So if I had roughly 3 feet of soil, I had a culvert down in the ground, and I had put 3 feet of soil over it, I'd have a protection factor of roughly 500, okay? Now, we'll talk about that and just what that means, but a protection factor of 500 is going to reduce those Rankines. It's going to stop almost everything, okay, for quite a while. As a matter of fact, they say for most of the United States, if we had a major attack, you'd want protection factor between 500 to 1,000. Now, notice if I have a protection factor of 512 and I add one more level of earth, so now instead of 3 feet, I have 3 feet, 6 inches, I've now doubled that to 1,000. So 3.5 feet. You see how that it's amazing how that
right.
How that works. So that's the concept. So now, let's say you have a basement, and I have a wall around that basement that is 6 inches. Okay, that has two protection factors. What that means is I could drop my soil in half and put it around that base. So now I only have about 1.5 feet of soil around that base, and I've essentially got a 500 feet, or a protection factor of about 500, and which is what in a national emergency you'd kind of want to think about. So in my home, I have the basement surrounds it, but then there's a floor over, and of course you have your roof and you have your insulation and you have boards and lumber and things like that that the radiation would have to go through. So what I would do in my home is I have it on it's on an outside wall against a cement foundation, and it comes up about 18 inches above the surface of the ground, which most homes are going to be something similar to that, okay? And so I would actually put about 1.5 feet or 2 feet of soil. Now, remember, I've got a little bit of time and say, this might be coming. I might grab my wheelbarrow and start digging up my garden area and the soil in there and start pouring that soil around the outside. Then I would come, I would open our front door, I would put down a big tarp, so I'm not going to ruin all my furniture and everything else like that. I'm going to put a big tarp down, and I'm going to put soil over the top of that. Now, what that's going to do, I might put some boards underneath to kind of strengthen it underneath, to give it some strength for the floor joist, just to make sure. But then I would cover that with soil, and I would just take 3 or 4 hours and start pumping, just dig and throw it in there, if I thought it was imminent, okay? And I would put that over there. And pretty soon, I would say I've got a full basement that has a pretty good protection against the radiation. And for the first 2 days, I would not even dare go outside there. After that, I might go out and maybe gather some more water and bring it back down. I might empty the waste bucket. That's another topic. We should talk about the waste that has to be taken care of down there. Okay? And so that's the kind of protection you say that's not that difficult to do. Okay? Now, the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, talks about, this is just one little tiny thing that can be done. And you say, you know what? If I can take care of that. And I think probably a majority of the people that are on this call are people that have a backyard, probably have their own basement, or at least have a place that they that's not in a downtown apartment. I think that's probably generally the people who are on these calls. I may be wrong. But think about those basements. Think about those kind of places where you could be and say, if this were really coming, then that's what I would probably start doing. But in the book, it also talks about how to build your own shelter. Are they going to be great? Are they going to be comfortable? Not very comfortable, but they'd save your life. And after a couple of days, you might go out and get some more water, clean out some of the stuff that we need to take care of, and you can actually survive this. And then after about 2 weeks, you can actually start getting out and doing things, cleaning up, cleaning the soil off, and trying to take care of things. The question is, what do we do about our chickens or our livestock? It's more difficult, and it might be that we need, we have to start thinking about that as well if it would become critical. And, of course, with this call, we don't have enough time to talk about that. There is one more thing I wanted to mention, so I make sure we don't miss it. We've probably heard on television shows when they're talking about the radiation, the disasters, and they talk about radiation sickness. What is radiation sickness? Radiation sickness is when your body absorbs too much radiation. And what happens is when the body absorbs radiation, it channels it to one place, and it channels it. It tries to channel that into the thyroid. So how do we take care of this? You need to saturate your thyroid with iodine, because it's iodine, for the type of radiation we'd experience, iodine, the isotopes of iodine is what's actually going to get into your body, and that's what's going to channel into iodine, so or into your thyroid. So you can get if it's channeling the radiated iodine, then it's going to really damage your body. But if it's if you can fill your thyroid with what do we call it, inert iodine, then you can protect yourself. So in the book, it talks about using 100% pure potassium iodide. Now, that is not the stuff, that's not that liquid that you buy for cleaning wounds, okay? This is 100% pure, and it's crystal. And you take a tiny bit of the crystals, and you have to get it, and it has the instructions, and the book itself teaches this. And I'm not even going to teach you how to do it because I don't want to be saying I'm giving you medical advice. So what I'm going to do is say, in that book, it talks exactly about how many crystals of this potassium iodide, that's KI, that's the chemical potassium iodide, and you mix it and make a small amount of iodine solution, and you use that iodine solution to ingest, and it tells you exactly how to put it in your water. Does it taste good? No, but it will protect you against the radiation poisoning. And you would not do this unless there is a definite imminent threat. Okay? And
I've got we've got the tablets that we've ordered, the what is it called, potassium iodate tablets that come, I don't know, 50 tablets. It's just, and you just take it versus having to mix or water or crystals or things like that. But I know you can find those on a lot of websites out there.
You can, But the problem with those is not is that they will degrade over time. They have a
right,
health.
Right.
But the potassium iodide does not. So you can get a little bottle of potassium iodide for maybe a couple, $2 or $3 at your you can go to get 100% pure potassium iodide, and you can then make that when you need it, and it will be good. It will always be good as long as you need it. And one little bottle will treat half a town, and so you don't really need that much. It's just, but the potassium iodide pills are mixed, are right, but the problem is they will be over, they might have a 10-year shelf life, and then you have to kind of replace them, and they won't be as good as when they were at the first. Kind of like when we talked about we prefer to mix, make our own chlorine solution for when we're mixing water, because chlorine, once it's mixed, it has a half-life and a shelf life. Clorox is for cleaning your water. The same principle, and that's why we teach using and learning how to do that. So anyway, so those are kind of the critical points that we would want to talk about, is that obviously distance from a blast is important because, it number one, the blast itself, but number two, because the amount of radiation. In the book, it also has a method to create your own little Geiger counter. That's anyway, it counts how much radiation you can get, and it's accurate. And it's just a little, makes by a little can, and you make it out of a tin can and a few pieces of aluminum foil and some things like that. It might cost you 50 cents, maybe a dollar to make this thing, and it's just as accurate. But you have to learn how to make it. And in the book, it has the instructions. Problem is, the instructions were written by an engineer, and sometimes you have to go, what is he saying here? But they are there, and it can be done. I would like to one of these days start actually making these or making a video and showing people exactly how to do it. But I haven't done that yet. So you can get the book. I do have a few copies of that book if you're interested in getting it. You can either get it on Amazon. I think someone posted that. Or we have some on our website, pazumpa.com. Go to the store. Pazumpa.com/store, and under books and DVDs, and you can get one of the books there. And I'm not sure if I have some of the potassium iodide. I don't know if I have it in the store or not, but you can look on there. But you can just look for the potassium iodide. But the most important thing you need to pay attention to is thinking about your situation and start saying, okay, I can think about my cellar situation. A cellar would work great if you have a cellar. A basement works great. even if you're in an apartment complex, okay, and if they have a basement, or if they have underground parking, then, you know, it's going to be surrounded by steel and everything. Now, the thing is, the question is, what about the blast itself? You have to think about that. The other thing, the concept about radiation, is the thing that it's different. Well, it's similar to, if you're shooting that 22 bullet, and that 22 bullet comes off and it hits a steel wall at a 45-degree angle, that bullet is going to turn, and it's now going to go at roughly a 90 degrees, I think. Assuming all, velocity and everything, it may not be quite 90 degrees, but anyway, it's going to turn the direction. Well, the same thing happens with radiation. Until the energy of that moving particle, from simple law of physics, when the energy particle absorbs or loses its energy, it will stop, and that bullet is no longer causing any damage once it's stopped. Okay? So when you're creating a shelter, the best thing to do is, okay, obviously the entrance, that has an open hole that the radiation is going to come down. Well, it's going to come down, and it's going to ricochet off the floor or whatever, and it might, it's going to start bouncing. So you actually want, if they're really building a shelter, they actually build tubes, because there's a certain distance that it can go travel down a tube, and it has a real hard time turning corners. It's like sunlight. When you hit sunlight, it will go in and hits the floor. The only reason you can see the sunlight is because of the particles in the air that's reflecting the light, okay? But if you put just a little barrier on there, the sunlight would stop, okay? Well, the same type of thing, if you have a corner in the pyramids of Egypt, they used to light the pyramids of Egypt using a mirror and the sun, okay? A series of mirrors. They would take the mirror, they would reflect the sunlight down a corridor until it reached, and then they'd hit another mirror down a corridor, and they could shine sunlight all the way into the center of a pyramid, okay? Well, the same thing holds true. If there's not a mirror there, it's going to stop, okay? And so it can't bend that corner. The light, without that mirror, that light would have stopped, and they couldn't see inside. After the second turn, pretty much 100% of the light has stopped. And the same thing holds true with radiation particles. It's going to go down. You might get a little bit of the bounce, but after the second or third angle, it's going to have a hard time. So, like for my home, I have the basement, and the stairway comes down one side. Okay? Well, I'm going to try to put a barrier between that wall and try to block as much as I can, but it will still have some angles because where I'm going to be able to get in and out. Okay? But so if I'm on the other end of that, and it had to go around a couple barriers to get over into where I'm at, I reduced 90 or 100, a large percentage of that particles that would come in through the opening. So those are the kind of things. So think about your own environment, your own home, where you're at. Say, okay, if we had that, we have this amount of thickness of concrete, how much soil would I need, and how could I make sure that I could protect my floor above it, and then put soil on it so that if I need to, now I can haul that soil back out, lift up stuff, vacuum around maybe a little bit of the edges, and my house is just fine, okay? Because, again, once the radiation stops, it's not like your house is going to be radiated and radiating you for the rest of your life. That's not the way it works. The bullet has stopped. The radiation is gone. When we get rid of the particles that are shooting the bullets, then the radiation is gone. It's not going to radiate your ground, and it's going to be dead forever. The reason it destroys your ground is the radiation has penetrated into the ground, killing the microorganisms and any life that was in it. But the soil is still soil. You get new microorganisms, and the soil produces just like it did before, once you get the radiation material off of the soil. Okay? So you can protect, and as a matter of fact, very quickly start producing. We've taken our garden. Sometimes we have problems with weeds. We will irradiate the soil and kill everything, and then we have to try to build up the microorganisms back into it, but then I have good quality soil again without all the weed seeds.
Wow. Aaron, that is really amazing. to think about using irradiation to kill all your weed seeds. But listen, Eric, we're running out of time. This is absolutely fascinating, but we've only got about 10 minutes to go. Whisper, do you have any last questions or comments about this amazing topic and how informative it's been?
I just sure hope everybody and took a lot of notes and had their pen and paper together, and then maybe we can continue this. Aaron will be joining us again in 2 more weeks. He'll be on the third Monday also, and we may be able to continue this, maybe talk also about maybe a biological incidents as well, and because I know we didn't even hit really on the old myth of duct tape and plastic, and talk a little bit about that. There's just so many questions that I know we all have, and I know we took a lot of time talking about the science of how this works, which is very important. And then maybe we continue the next time the preparedness show with Aaron Mackley, and we can continue with this in more ways. We can protect ourselves for other different types of disasters. That'll be great. So thank you very much, Aaron, for coming on today.
Well, thank you. It's been fun. We look forward to next time.
Yes, absolutely. Always do. And you have a great week.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Aaron. That was really, really informative. Boy, Whisper, I got to start thinking new ways about the nuclear things, and it's just part of what I want to do anyway. So it just goes right along with self-sufficiency, doesn't it?
It does. We'll continue this with Aaron again, and other topics that he comes on and shares with us the first and third Monday of every month here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley, and he's shared so much valuable information with us, from food storage to water purification to water storage to sprouting, the whole nine yards. So it's very, very valuable information to have. We're going to take a very quick commercial break, but before we do, I'm going to ask today's Chicken at Trivia question. Today, being Monday, is sponsored by Crazy K Farm. And one lucky listener, if they're the correct caller and answer the answer correctly, they're going to win a Crazy K Farm hen saver, hen saddle, or hen apron, they call it. And you can visit them online at hensaver.com and take a look at this item. If you have, of course, they could possibly protect your hens from an unexpected hawk attack, and they definitely can protect your hens from that overzealous rooster, especially on his favorites. If you have the rooster in the hen's backyard, you don't want your hens going into winter with a bald back because of your overzealous rooster. So visit them online at hensaver.com. One lucky listener is going to go away. So the question today is, we're going to take caller number six. Caller number six today is going to be the question. What is the term that refers to when a too large of an egg gets stuck inside the chicken? Very, very simple. We can get into all the technical terms, but y'all know I'm not technical, just like the book I'm coming out with. Very, very simple, down-to-earth, layman's terms. What do I really need to know, folks? That's what we're working on. So today's trivia question, what is the term that refers to when too large of an egg gets stuck inside the chicken? The hen just can't lay that egg. It gets stuck. We're looking for a term of what that is called. If you know the answer, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. We'll go to the phone lines right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, the incubation specialists. Brinsea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsey. Technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, Manipro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manipro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're going straight to the phone lines, Pat is with us, of course, live. Caller calling in from area code 210, area code 210. You're the correct caller. If you'll state your name and what state you're calling from, please.
Hi, this is Kim, and I'm calling from Texas.
Texas.
Yay, Texas.
Yay,
not
Texas.
Really.
All righty, and let me get over here, and I'll repeat the question again. What is the term that refers to when a too large of an egg gets stuck inside the hen? Just can't quite get that sucker out. What term are we looking for, Kim?
I'm hoping you're looking for egg bound.
That's what we're going to take, egg bound. That is correct. You have won yourself a Hen Saver Hen Apron. Congratulations. In fact, Crazy K Farm is there located in Texas as well. So that's going to be a real quick shipment for you. Kim, are you on Facebook?
Yes, I will. I'll send you my address and everything.
That'll be perfect. Send it via Facebook. Save us a telephone call and a little bit of time. I'll get that over to Toby at Crazy K Farm, and we'll get that sent out to you as soon as possible. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you have a great week.
Hey, thank you very much.
Congratulations, Kim.
All righty, Pat. Well, we've got about less than 60 seconds left. They just tell me in my ear, so we're going to wrap it up. Hang on real quick. This could be, let's see. Yeah, okay, I was just checking that. Okay, you want to tune in this Wednesday, another great episode of The Living Garden. This Thursday, Poultry Today with Bridget McCray, and another fun Friday coming at you this week. We hope you can tune in every day at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Pat.
Yeah, okay. Well, gosh, what a great show. Thank you, Aaron Mackley, for the information on nuclear emergency preparedness. Of course, Andy Schneider, thanks to you for bringing us all together so we can all cluck along. And thanks to our chat room chickeneers and all our listeners for joining us. Of course, thanks to blogtalkradio.com for the radio, chat, and video services. And once and forever and always, blessings to you all. And may the flock be with you. God bless everybody.
Oh.